afternoon, everyone. Welcome to everything you wanted to ask students about the library, but didn't know anybody to ask. Part two. This is our current. So this is going to be a very informal, free-flowing session. Here are our panelists. When I'm done talking here, I'm going to turn it over to them and have them introduce themselves. We've got a whole range of students here. Your questions. The format, again, is going to be informal. I have some questions. People wrote in some questions ahead of time. So I'm going to be going to them and then interchanging that with going to all of you to be able to ask questions. So going back and forth. As well as through WebEx. Gwen and others are waiting. But if they have questions, we'll be going back and forth. I've asked our panelists to be candid and relaxed. And so that's, you know, we'll see how that goes. And just speak up so we can hear them. So that's pretty much how it's going to run its course, and we'll just go until we feel like we've answered everything. And okay? All right. So I'm going to start, why don't we start down there with Audrey, and we're just going to go through and introduce yourselves briefly, and then we'll start the show.
Okay. My name is Audrey Fuchiever. I'm a senior at CALS. I study international agriculture and rural development. And I also am minoring in East Asian Studies at the College of Arts and Sciences. And I'm from D.C. originally. And I went to India with Janet over winter break.
Devin McMahon. I'm a biology major in CALS. I'm a junior. And I spend a lot of time in Mann Library.
Hi, my name is Aishani. I don't usually sound like this. I'm a senior in the College of Arts and Sciences. I'm studying economics, and I'm also minoring in communication. I think for someone in arts and sciences, I've taken a remarkable number of classes in agriculture and life sciences. And so that and the fact that I hang out in Duffield a lot gets me a lot of comments about being an engineer / A major. So I'm the most obscure economics major there is. And I'm originally from New Delhi, India, so we should talk.
Hi everyone, I'm Avik. I'm a second year PhD student in electrical and computer engineering. My work is more towards applied physics and optics, so I like to play with light and its interaction with matter. I'm a member of the Student Library Advisory Council, and I think it's a very good platform to be here and voice our opinions. And I'm from India originally, so...
Yeah. I'll have a big group talk.
My name is Madison Grasty. I'm a junior human biology, health, and society major in HUMAC. I'm also part of the Student Library Advisory Council, and I'm from New Jersey.
My name is Asia Thompson. I'm a first year MRP student in college. I'm from Atlanta originally.
Right. We are so happy you guys are here. So I'm going to start with a question from my list, which is a pretty open-ended question, so feel free to answer, which is, what is your main reason for, and I like the way this is phrased, actually, what is your main reason for using a Cornell library? So I think this is a question about like a physical space. Interpret that however you want. And
I'll go ahead. I think I choose Mann Library because I like the light. I'm big on like natural light and like bright light, and sometimes in Olin it almost seems like not dark because there's obviously lights, but it's just like the lighting feels different, and I just feel like better when I'm studying in brighter light.
I choose Iris, the cocktail room, because I just like quiet time and, you know, having that alone space.
I'm like somewhere between the two of you, because I'm a big fan of Olin. I agree that Mann has more natural light, so I often oscillate between the two. I for some reason have never warmed to Eurus. I apologize if any of the librarians from there. But I don't know, I haven't warmed to it. I just feel like it's oftentimes too quiet and not well lit enough for me. Although I've heard, like, all my friends are big fans of the cocktail lounge, it just never worked for me.
Yeah, so my main reason for using the library is to study, and I think I'll use a lot of the online platforms, like, just from my apartment. But yeah, definitely studying, and I am an Olin fourth floor kind of person, so.
I'd say the library is the best place to study while you're on campus, usually. I also like to study in the empty conference rooms in Weil because they're big and convenient and quiet. And yeah, that's a good reason to go to the library is for a quiet space where you can spread out your stuff. And I think Man does a really good job of having a lot of table space.
I would tend to agree with what she said. Like, Man, I think, is a very nice place to study. It's not that I spend a lot of time in the libraries because being a graduate student, we have offices and I work on my experiment more. But whenever I get a chance, I like to spend time in Olin Library or Man Library. And I think the study space that they offer and the quiet study space is pretty useful to me.
Okay, if I could add something. I don't live very far from campus. I'm about 10 to 15 minutes walking from Olin or Eurus, maybe. But I think the physical distance from home also helps. I feel like I'd be more productive in a library setting than I would be at home, where it's easier for me to, you know, just curl up on my couch and be like, oh, I'll just take a 15-minute nap, which becomes like a 5-hour nap.
Yeah.
It becomes like a 5-hour nap, and you wake up, and you're like, I didn't get my paper done. So I think the physical distance helps. Plus, I think I'm someone that doesn't like to carry a very heavy bag. Like, I have a sling bag right now, so oftentimes I like to use the library for, you know, like if I don't have a charger, to use like a laptop charger over there, or to use those kind of resources. So,
any last comments on? Let me turn it over to the audience for a question. Go.
Yes, I probably asked this question the last time we had this panel, but since it's been a while, the answers may change. So I'm an engineering librarian here, and I'm interested in how you use ebook back on. Which platforms are working, which ones aren't working, which ones might be replacing print books. Adi, would you like to start?
Yeah, sure. I guess I haven't used a lot of ebooks directly from the library. I've used a few at times, but we definitely use a lot of ebooks that we come across either through friends or professors. I mean, a lot of professors nowadays put ebooks or e-copies of their books online on their websites for use by the students. And I think that's pretty useful for us to get a glance of how much important the book is for the course before we actually buy the print version. And in some cases, ebooks could be actually more useful because they have hyperlinked references so that you can jump between pages and citations. I think that is a very important feature which we don't get in the print version of a book. But I think apart from this, as online resources, we tend to use more papers and articles than just ebooks because there's still that thing that a print version of a book, you can flip through pages, and that gives us a different feeling than just reading from an ebook. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, I think like faster searchability is definitely like a factor. That's not always possible. I've noticed like some ebooks you can search keywords and some you can't. I usually go to the library.cornell.edu website. And so I've used it for, you know, references in some of my papers. It's been a while since I actually think I used an ebook from a Cornell library, probably fall of last year. But I think for me, the biggest factor is that it allows me to maybe search quicker for certain keywords or certain quotations that I'm looking for.
I've used an ebook once, and that was because I was studying for a test, and my physical book didn't have an index, so I was able to be able to search the terms I needed to know. Yeah, I don't usually use ebooks.
I guess ebooks are also useful because let's say we are studying at home at night, and we don't want to go to the library, or maybe the circulation desk is closed. So we can, if we can get an e-copy of the book at the last moment. Or maybe it's just that we are feeling too lazy to go to a library and pick it up. We can access an ebook from the comfort of our working place or home. I think that's also pretty useful.
So I have a follow-up question from one of the ones that got sent in, which is very similar, so I think I'll piggyback on it, which is, do you really want your reserves as ebooks?
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, I think it's the question of if you had books on reserve for a class, would you want them as an ebook?
Okay.
Or would you rather have them as...
If you had the reserves as an ebook, that would essentially, if you could just like have unlimited copies because everyone can access it, I would stop buying textbooks and just use that. That would be awesome.
I also
don't let the publishers hear you. Staying in the room, don't.
I also think that I think it would be helpful. It would just depend on if, like, how it would operate. So, for instance, does that mean for that online period where you're, you know, viewing a particular copy for 2 hours, is the time restricted?
Mm-hmm.
Can no one else
way,
see it in the same time?
Right.
But I do think it, like, increases the availability. It's not like you walk into a library and you're like, I really need this book to study for a text, and they're like, for a test, and they say that, oh, I'm sorry, all the copies are already checked out. So it is definitely a way to make it more available, especially cause some of those restrictions can be varied more while it's online. So I think that would be great. I think there's only an advantage in it for students and for the library as a resource, and not so much for publishers, I guess.
So it sounds like in terms of availability, the electronic could.
I think it's like convenient. I mean, I know I have my physics textbook at library, and then sometimes like, if I want to study at Mann, and if I want to like recheck that book out, you have to kind of like, okay, I guess I'm going to have to take a break in 2 hours to like walk the book back, check it out, hope that like no one else wants it, and then like walk back, and then you, if you waste your time almost like walking, if you're in a crunch or something, then it almost seems like it's frustrating and a waste of time to walk there if they don't have it or someone else is waiting for it and you're kind of just out of luck. So having it online could like eliminate, I guess, that small walk. But if you maybe you don't want to study in Mann, you want to further away, like that walking distance could definitely have how much you could possibly, you didn't want to carry it around campus with you all day.
When do you work?
Well, I was just going to follow, rather than just ebooks and reserve, I started putting material, so just...
I feel like my professors may not be too familiar with it. There's a lot of times where they'll put things on reserve and I go to the library and then the librarian tells me that it's not there.
Yeah.
And like, I know it's here, you know, and then, you know, they spend like 30 minutes looking for it, then they finally find it. And then I remember the first time I did it, I had, you know, I realized that you can't leave with the book or the video, you have to sit there, and it's like, to me, it's kind of inconvenient, the whole reserve thing, and I wasn't too sure when I was actually doing it, how it even worked. So
I've also had two experiences where professors have put books on reserve and then they're just not there, and that's very frustrating if you're counting on that book for a class.
I think I've had more experience with professors putting video CDs or DVDs on reserve, and it is, I think because the time is limited, sometimes it is a little frustrating because you might want to go to a different location and watch it, but you have to stay there and watch it. But I might not have headphones on me, and all the headphones at the library might be checked out. So that, you know, it causes logistical problems like that. I think another thing was I really wanted to study in Olin, and all my reserve items were in Eurus. And so, I mean, I obviously wasn't sure if I could go and, like, check it out. And obviously I was being lazy because it was raining outside. But just, like, those minor things can, you know, sometimes sway you either way and be like, oh, I'll just, like, deal with it tomorrow. Or, like, watch it another time instead of watching it today. I think if there was more cross-availability of items like that, like, I'm not sure if there's already a way to do this, but I have tried to put, I don't know what it's called, booking a reserve, or, like, you can reserve an item ahead of time and be like, you'll pick it up at a certain time. And I don't know, that online system wasn't as seamless as I was hoping it would be. It just didn't work. It said that I had to go there in person and pick it up. Maybe that's the way it is for some items. And I think if you could, like, place it on hold in advance, that would be good. Or if you can already do that, if someone could ensure that that online system is working, that would help. Because then I would just go pick it up at Eurus and go straight to Olin and, you know, watch it there and then drop it back and head home. I mean, there have been a few cases where I happen to have it or, like, a friend happened to have it. But I've only done those in cases where I really, like, where it was much more convenient for me to just get it from a friend or, you know, obviously use my own resource. I have also found, like, for some of my classes that had videos, they were the films or the documentaries were uploaded on YouTube by the original publisher, so I did that. Yeah, I guess one of those two.
I've taken two courses in the physics department in the last two semesters, and both of our professors placed the textbooks and some of the references on reserve. The thing is, for both of the courses, the professors also made the textbook available online. Because, I mean, one of the professors was the person who wrote the book himself. So it was very easy for him that way. But I think I've personally never used the reserve system, just because I've never really had to go to that extent where I need to use it. But I'm sure if it was required and I did not have any other way of accessing the book, the reserve system would be very useful. Just that I've never used it personally.
So you've never gone to a lecture? No.
But I know quite a few of my classmates have done that, and it's been pretty useful for them. Sometimes we go to the library, use the reserved book, and take notes, or let's say copy a portion of the book in the library itself, and then use it for our reference later. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty useful.
When in cyberspace?
Do any of you follow the library on Facebook or Twitter? If so, or if not, what's the most useful or interesting kind of...
Yeah, I didn't know for the Twitter. I definitely knew about Facebook, and I think I do. I think events, I definitely like to hear about events, and like I know there are lecture series that take place at Lib sometimes, and usually I'll only find out about those because I live at Lib, like it's my second home. So I'll usually like see a poster there or something, that's how I'll find out about it. But it would be nice for it to like pop up on my newsfeed, just if it happens to be a day where I'm not crossing that way, for me to know that. I think it's also a good way for people to know to avoid Lib, because otherwise people go there to study or to hang out and get turned away. And I think everyone has a sense of entitlement when it comes to Lib because people are so fond of it. They don't like being turned away. And so that might actually incentivize people to go to these events. I think also if there's like a special, if you have like, I don't know if the library has a program of visiting fellows. If there's anyone of interest, like an author, a filmmaker, even if they're not doing an event with the library, let's say they're doing an event with the West Campus Houses, or if they're doing something with the film club, or if they're doing something with the Cornell Cinema, I don't know how much the library coordinates with these different entities, but it would be nice to hear about those from the library as well, because ultimately it's about the dissemination of knowledge and, you know, connecting you with these people. So that would be nice. And if Mandibles is ever having, like, a discount or anything.
Anybody else? Facebook, Twitter,
or
the library?
That's
I've not... I've
how
not
many, just show of hands, and we can tell. How many of you were not aware that the library had a Facebook page? Kind of. Okay, so, Gwen, that's like 2.5 hands. I'd say half.
I would say I wouldn't probably use it at all, because, I don't know, I just think... The whole Facebook and Twitter thing, there's way too much, like, too many people on Facebook and Twitter, and I think it's so much easier for me to find out an event just by going to Cornell events and having it all there versus having to go through all my different sources to find out if an event was happening. I definitely, wouldn't.
Well, that actually feeds very well into another question from that was sent in to us ahead of time, which is, what's the best way to tell you about events and programs going on in the library? Email, posters, Facebook, or something else. What's the in general? What's the best way to keep you updated about library resources? So, about finding out about events, finding out about resources. What from the library? What's the best way for each of you that you would most likely use?
I would say for me, really quick, I think emails and posters are the most effective, for sure. I agree with you a lot on what you said about social media, but I think those are good added tools for the library to use in terms of Facebook and Twitter, because you never know what event will catch the fancy of the community and will get heavily...
Like a poster or...
Right, yes. So I think in the email and postering is the most effective, most direct way for a lot of college students, because, yes, a lot of them might not necessarily check the library Facebook page regularly, mm-hmm. but you never know for how well it can work for specific events. So I feel like to not have that added presence would just take away like an additional marketing or informational tool that the library has. So I think that email and postering should be used more, and Facebook and Twitter can just be like support for the same.
Great. It would just be like even if you got a newsletter at the beginning of every year, here's what's happening, and you're like, oh my gosh, a lot. It would just be helpful to almost kind of have that constant reminder, because if you have the reminder on your phone, which I feel like most people have, or app to see that than like going earlier. So I think that that'd be a really great way to get everything out there.
So if the library had some way to email Cornell students, mm-hmm. you, and then you got something in your inbox that said, from the Cornell Library, read it?
I would, yeah, but I would say that I think maybe some of us in this panel are more amenable to it than everyone, you know, because not everyone is. A lot of people just like to use the library for like the study space, and it's like in and out, you know. That's no other contact or affiliation or special love for the place. And so I think, yeah, there are some people that would be like, no, I don't want a weekly email from the library. So I think you can vary the frequency. Such if it is if it was like an opt-in kind of list sort of, then I mean, why wouldn't, like, then you know what you signed up for. And if it was more, I think, bi-weekly than weekly,
okay,
so you know, it wouldn't seem as, yeah.
So how do you find out about this opt-in, hypothetically speaking?
Well, it could be like Cornell Cinema, where I get an email every Monday about the movies that are playing. I think if you just go to like club fair, yeah. And then word of mouth, and you just sign up. I don't know, you have a table at a lot of, like, table outside Manor in a library, I think people could sign up.
I think mentioning someone on the reference desk.
Yeah, like having, I don't know, like a clipboard or something up that's like always there that you could say you change your mind halfway through the semester. They're like, yeah, oh, I want to hear about these things. Like, you could just sign up your name right there. And maybe not making the subject like from the Cornell Library, maybe making like speakers this week or like people visiting campus this week, like something that may be more intriguing than just like, this is from the library.
Or like book recommendation.
Yeah, something like that.
And I think when you like when you ask people to sign in, I think you hinted at this. You'll have to make it very clear that it's not just going to be like a generic listserv, so that people don't just presume that it's going to be spam. Make it very clear that they'll be getting information about, you know, like events, stuff, like maybe exhibits at the Croc Library. I never know how to pronounce it, by the way, if someone can.
That's right.
Croc Library. Or a particular speaker you have coming. Yeah. Or even like other events going on around campus. I think one thing that makes people really excited about it being opt-in is sometimes if an organization is doing an event, maybe not with the Cornell University Library, but could be of interest to students who are signed up on the listserv library, you could give them like an option that, you know, every week we'll highlight one or two events that other student organizations are doing if they pertain to the interest of the students that visit the library. And like, I think that becomes it becomes like a community in that sense. It's like, you know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. Makes people more likely to sign up for it as well and be interested in it, like, genuinely.
And I mean, we've discussed this a bit in other meetings. Like, some people like to have their Facebook presence separate from their professional lives or their academic lives. And in that case, having people sign up for, I mean, not sign up, I mean, visit the Facebook page is not good, but then it depends on the person.
Some people would want to be very comfortable mixing like the academic and the personal.
Exactly. And I think another very good platform is events.cornell.edu. Like, there is a website for Cornell events, and I came to know about Wardrobes and Rabbit Holes, the exhibition in Croc Library, through events.cornell.edu.
Okay, that's really good to know. That's really good.
And I mean, I got emails about it too, but I think the events.cornell.edu page is a pretty good place to showcase events.
I think also I have thought about this before, because the library has like really interesting. I went down to the book tour, got the term, and I forgot the lady's name. Engel? Miss Engel? I forget. It was through a class for American Studies. Yes, Miss Elaine Engel. She's a.
University archivist.
So yeah, I went down for that exhibit, and she was talking about this girl that had missed out on the Lincoln exhibit, and she was like really upset about it, and she felt like the library had done a good job of, you know, marketing it, but the girl had still somehow missed it. Whenever I use the computers at the library, I always wonder why the background is like this plain red, black thing. That's such an easy way to just, like, have, like, a poster there, because everyone who uses it, whether or not they're interested, like, immediately sees it. And even if they're not interested in it, if they hear a friend talk about it, they're like, oh, yeah, there's something going on at the library with that.
Is somebody writing this down?
I've always thought about, like, why is that just, like, this plain red thing? Like, it's a very good marketing tool.
Really good.
I think that would be cool because I just wanted to put in a plug for, well, I think the most effective way to learn about FX for me is posters, and I know that's kind of a waste of paper and resources when you could do it online, but I like, posters are just on the wall, I don't have to interact with them, they're not
they're not personal,
they don't collect information about me, they're just on the wall, and I can write down the information that's on them, and so I like posters the best.
Where would you...
Posters are also nice, because when I walk through halls, I like to look at the bulletin boards, just as like something to do, so like bulletin boards in libraries, in academic buildings, I always look on like the ones that have pull tabs. Maybe you can get $10.
Oh yeah.
You know, I always look for those. So
I'm curious, how many of you who've been into OLED and have ever stopped and looked at the sort of the digital postering, the LCD? I mean, show of hands.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good. I just make sure all the work we're doing.
that's very commendable.
Any other thoughts about how you like to be contacted? Sounds like posters and emails. With Facebook, for some people, being a nice supplement on top of that. Opt-in email list.
What catches your eye? Do you remember the last one that caught your eye?
I think it's just really bright. As soon as I walk into the library, it's right there. I'm talking about Olin.
Okay.
And I've seen the ones at Man also. Those are, I believe, outside, if I'm not wrong. So I think it's just like in Man, usually when you walk in, you spend some time like hanging out in the atrium before you go in. It's kind of like its own like social place, meeting spot. And so while you have that extra time while you're waiting for a friend or just, you know, finishing your food before going to the library, because the libraries don't love food, you have the digital, you have the poster to look at. And, you know, it's nice because it stays on for long enough that you can register the details kind of before flipping to something new, where it's like, oh, maybe you're also interested in this, maybe you're also interested in this. And I think it's an improvement over the bulletin boards in the sense that I do still stop and look at the bulletin boards, but not everyone does. And especially if you're advertising for your own event, if someone else like overlaps on top of that, it feels bad because like a lot of, I think, nice events get covered up. So it's more like a poster contest than like a come to a event. So I think the digital posters are a really good way to improve that. And I think the places where they're positioned are really good, at least in Olin and Man, because in Olin it's like right outside right when you enter the library. I think it's a good place to have it. Same with Man, it's in the atrium, it's very visible. And, you know, it talks about events both relating to the library and things that students wanted to advertise about, like things by student organizations that are not necessarily library affiliated. And I think that improves their chances of being absorbed and noticeable to the students.
And I think it could be helpful for those is, like, you have the big screen and then say you had, like, 2/3 of the screen being devoted to, like, the one main like image of those like 15 seconds on the side, maybe the ones before it and the ones after. So say you come in and like you glance it and you walk by, but you just missed it when it had its own 15 second passing. Well, like you have to sit and wait, and who knows like how many are before it or after. You have to sit and wait. Like there's no way of knowing. So maybe having that information before or after would be really helpful. So you could quickly jot down. Even though it's smaller, you could still see it just enough to write down like the basic information, then you would know if I come back in a half hour it may pop back up if I sit for 10 minutes or something.
Today Man had a picture of like the hawk thing going on, like, and I thought that was amazing. Yeah. I usually walk right by and I was like, what? So I came back and
the red tailed hawks are nesting again.
Oh, yeah, the nest cams are great.
Yeah. So, I had never seen that.
We put those up, I think, it just happened to coincide round finals, and it really was one of those things. It's not actually, if, for those of you who haven't been in Man, we have the
in the lobby, there's an LCD screen with a message. But then this was like right by the information desk. It's another LCD screen just devoted to, it was the hawk and then the heron, which was also nesting out at Sapsucker Woods. And I can't tell you the number of people just stopped and said, oh, and it really was. So, animal kingdom.
Yeah.
From the audience again, Janet?
An imaginary question, but if you had a brother or a sister maybe 5 years younger, what do you think they'd expect when they came to libraries 5 years?
Floating chairs?
5 years. What do you Well, I mean, yeah, I'll tell you what prompted my question. I was talking to a student recently. They said they didn't have a tablet, but they're going to expect that most...
I think more digitization is inevitable, and it's helpful in a lot of cases. I'm the kind of person that, personally, every now and then, I do need to pick up a physical book and read it, just because I like to feel it. I like... it's hard to explain, but I don't think an e-book can ever completely replace a physical book. But I think for the sake of convenience, there will be more of that. I expect the library to expand more of its electronic resources, for sure. I only recently found out that some libraries have phone chargers. I didn't know about that before because my phone always dies and it's a perpetual problem. And I wish that was there for all the libraries across the board, especially because it's also a supplement to campus safety. You know, like walking back home, you don't want to walk with a dead phone if you don't have someone to walk back with. So I think for that purpose, like, I know Man has it, Olin doesn't, Yuris doesn't. Olin does. I wasn't aware of that. So I think all the libraries should have it. I'm not sure why they don't. Maybe they're working on it. But that's something that I would like to see in the future. I'd also like to see more of, I think, like, I've heard my friends make these comments, and it's not nice because I don't think of it the same way, but sometimes they feel like library events or books that they publicize or speakers that they bring are more in the academic realm and not so much in the pop culture realm. And I feel like there is an in-between ground to be found there, because it's not like everyone is reading only fantasy fiction novels or only, you know, heavy academic literature. I think there are books that are science-related that have become popular, or books that were on economic theory that have, you know, made it to the New York Times bestseller list, most widely read lists. And I feel like even if we can't bring speakers like that related to those books, or authors of those books, or people involved in the publication of those books to campus, I feel like the library can do events around it. For instance, I apologize if this already happens. I'm just not aware of it. I've always wondered why the library doesn't do occasional movie screenings. You know, they could do it in partnership with the Cornell Cinema, do it at the Cornell Cinema, or you could honestly close down Libe and have a particular movie screening there. It could be a documentary, it could be educational, but I feel like it just creates a completely different atmosphere and opinion and aura around the library. Like, it's not thought of as this, I'm really hesitating to use the word, but I'm going to use it. It's not my personal opinion, but it just makes it less, it makes it seem less boring, which is what people had that opinion of the library a lot of times, and I don't know why, because it doesn't have to be. I know there are popular books like, I'm going on for a really long time. So I'm gonna say, So, like The Hunger Games were really popular at, you know, one point of time, and I'm not saying, it's a preteen novel, I'm not expecting college age kids to read it, but if we just, like, I don't know, did events around that, I don't know, I don't have
a way to do an archery contest at Mann Library. It got shot down for some reason.
I would vote for that. I mean, the atrium has so much space.
I think in the short term, looking, so I do have a younger brother, and I was recently looking at theses online just to see, or in dissertations, like what, but one day I choose to pursue that path, like what they would look like, and I was very surprised to find that most of them and this was for agriculture economics, were not online. They were all over the library, and someone who was working there was so sweet and tried to help me out, but like they're not even in one place. They're like in different, and so if I'm just looking to browse different dissertations, I can not only not browse the hard copy, but not browse the online copy. And I thought, oh, that's something that will probably need to like be revamped in a few years.
So I mean, you actually, we'll talk to you afterwards. we'll show you how to do that, and then you can
get all of them.
You should be able to browse.
No, I can browse, but they say that they're not online yet. Like
actually,
the ones.
Oh right. Well, that's a different. Yeah.
Due to copyright issues, especially. True graduate students. It's not really a library decision, but it's more of a graduate student and faculty and graduate school decisions. It's for their future publishing. But it's an excellent point that we actually are working with the grad school and making a case, and I'm writing, noting this. I love sentence.
Would it help, Audrey, even just to have an app
There's abstract, but it's like,
I don't, I kind of wanted to offer a counterpoint to the, idea that the library needs to promote more pop culture events. I kind of feel like one of the really nice things about the library is it promotes this like space that is for academics and outside, it's separate from like social and entertainment aspects. And I think that there's a lot of like organizations on campus that already promote that kind of an event. And I think just personally and from opinions of friends, it's nice to have like a space where that is not, and a space where you feel like you need to be productive and all the resources are there for you to be productive and not trying to like distract you. So I kind of feel like it's maybe it would help me most if the library like promotes like academic events and doesn't need to promote something that's already promoted by, you know, the New York Times bestseller list.
Any last opinions on gazing into the future for, you know, future Cornell students who are about 12 or 13 years old right now? When they hit Ithaca in 5 years, what they're going to be wanting?
Also, unless battery life gets better, I think chargers for every device imaginable expected in, like, all settings, because, like, we will, like, we ride, like, I'm on the track team, we ride on a bus a lot, and people get worried when there aren't, like, outlets to charge a computer on a bus, and so, like, that's expected, so.
Okay. I just remembered, Eurus does have a charging station, I've seen it as a good
cocktail. Yeah, that's, like, a good thing.
Yeah.
Do you expect plugs in the library? Like,
yeah.
That'd
be helpful. People like plugs. I think that's the desk plugs in man are like awesome.
Your last plug.
I would just like to say that the fact that we are having a pretty hard time coming up with points that in ways how to enhance the library for 5 years from now just says that Cornell Library is doing a very good job at the moment. Yeah. It's fulfilling, I think, 90% of our needs. Maybe the 10% is something which is not that easy to do.
Yeah.
But I think...
Yeah, the floating chairs we're going to have.
Yeah.
The hovercraft chair.
We're looking for the architecture department to come up with to design.
How about another question from the audience? We'll go on that side. We'll go Martha.
This has been. There's been quite a bit of discussion about Olin and Mann libraries.
To be honest, I only know where Mann, Uris, and Olin is. Everything else seems like to either be really far away. I just don't want to make that trek. But I mean, yeah, those are the only three that I know of.
I love the law library. The only issue is that it closes at 9, so I have to like wait and then pretend I'm a law student when I'm in there. And my friend popped the door for me, and it's totally worth it. I love the space, and it's way more convenient for me in the college town. I've also checked out the music library, which was really nice to study during exam week, but it closes pretty early. Viable for, and I think I've been to Rand as well, or Sibley. I like that a lot. As well.
I've been to, I used to go to Carpenter a lot. I visit the math library a lot because I have a gap between classes, and my class is right opposite the math library, so I tend to go in there. That's where I found out about this panel, actually. I usually only use them for their printing services. I also used to, at the beginning of the semester, studied a lot at the newly renovated Nestle Library in the Statler Auditorium. I didn't find it as much of an... I mean, I liked that you can people watch from the windows, but I found that I wasn't as productive there. It wasn't as much of like an intimate setting, plus I kept running into people that I knew. So it's good for that, if you're doing mechanical work, and it's okay to get distracted every now and then. And Carpenter just didn't have enough desk space when I used to go there. I used to work for the Cornell Animal Fund, so before my shift, after my shift, I would just walk outside, occupy like a particular desk. I can't say I've used many of the other resources at those specific libraries in terms of books and stuff. But I would say at the Statler Library, for instance, this is what made me thankful of being an art student, actually, because I think it's easier to check out a charger or check out a room or something in one of the other libraries like Olin and Eurus, maybe even Mann, than it is in Statler, because they keep your ID and like they make you sign a sheet, and it's like an entire process, and then they give it to you in a box and you have to give it back to them in a box. So I have to say that it made me thankful that other libraries make the facilitating process a little bit easier.
I like the business library a lot. It's usually pretty sparsely populated when I go in there. The ILR library is pretty nice too, because it has like that like underground kind of, you're not allowed to talk in here at all. I also used to like hanging out in the entomology library, because there wouldn't be anyone in there, and then there would always be that one person working the desk, and I was like, this is the best job, because this person is just getting paid to do her homework. So I understand why they closed the entomology library, but it is nice to have just, like, those small spaces, and it doesn't have to be, like, a fully functioning library, but just, like, those, like, small rooms where there's a desk, and you can just hang out there for a while if you have a class nearby.
That's what you need to
know. I used to also really like that, it's called the Africana Center, because that was like on North Campus, and it had a great thing going. I've used that in the summertime too, and I was here for a summer.
Another question from the audience. Gail, you had your...
there's library.cornell.edu, there are sites for individual libraries, there are library guides for courses and all kinds of things. Which, if any of these websites are working or not working?
I like library.cornell.edu. I feel like any question I have, like maybe with finding a resource or journal or anything, like I could start there. And then it's also convenient that it has kind of like a librarian chat also right there, so that if I can't find it on my own, I can easily just kind of scroll right or up or down and be able to chat the librarian, which is very, very, very convenient. And it's helpful. And you always are like, okay, library.cornell.edu, like I know the website, I can get there. It's no problem to find it. So that's really helpful.
I really like having all of the resources kind of centralized like that. I think having different websites for the different libraries is somewhat less helpful to me.
Yeah, library.cornell.edu is a very useful resource, and I think it would be more useful when the new search comes up. As far as I came to know, library.cornell.edu is coming up with a new search platform with more options and advanced filters or something. So I think it will only improve the usability. I also like the websites for Olin Eurus, not library.cornell.edu, and for the Mann Library. They are very pretty. That's and yeah, the chat feature, as she said, that's very useful.
I think there's also like the text a librarian thing. I've read about it. I've never actually used it, unfortunately. Probably should before I graduate, just like to see it. But I think a friend of mine used it, and she said that she asked a question like really late in the night, like around 2 or something, and she got an instant response. I don't remember if it was on chat or over text, but she was very impressed. Another friend asked a question ridiculously late, but got a response at 6 a.m., 2 hours later. So as far as I know, not from personal experience, but from hearing other people talk about it, they're definitely working as effective tools right now. I think they are things that everyone knows about, but doesn't often think about using. So I think maybe when professors talk about putting books on reserve and stuff, if they were to mention it to students, you know, like, because students will usually just do the research on their own and occasionally take help from the professor. People don't often look at the librarians as a resource beyond just asking how to get a particular book. And I think the professors could also encourage students to be like, okay, if this isn't working and if you can't find what you're looking for at the library, try to chat a librarian or text a librarian.
We have a question from WebEx.
Like seeing posters not about the library on the digital sign, or do you?
I've used the digital sign to publicize the farmer's market at Cornell, which is something that I'm involved with, so I love it personally, but
Yeah, I think it's a good way to promote other events, because it kind of just seems like an extension of bulletin boarding.
It's a great idea.
That was two thumbs up, Gwen. I think. Second question from.
Have you ever run into content or services that advisors or professors or TAs expect you to be able to not actually been able to access?
I recently had a paper that my professor wrote, and he suggested reading it for a research paper that I'm writing, and I could not find this anywhere, and so eventually he had to email it. And I found it, but I ended up finding it, but was not able to access it, and I think it was because it wasn't from a big journal. It was a smaller one, so I was not able to access it, so he emailed it to me.
I have a professor that expected us to know how to use a platform, and I had LexisNexis. I didn't know what I was doing, and I think partly because I wish I had spell check, like, or I had, like, the little red squigglies every time, because that makes a big difference. I just had to figure it out. Like, I just, me and someone from our class just sat there and toughed it out until we figured out what we were doing. I mean, we could have asked for help, but, it was late, and we didn't feel like going that extra mile.
I'm going to take one of the questions that were submitted ahead of time. Lengthy, so I'll repeat it. But what roadblocks do you see or perceive that prevent you, the student, from contacting staff, and these would be circulation staff or reference staff, with your questions or issues? Do you have any suggestions on how to overcome those roadblocks?
I think I've had many roadblocks at all. I mean, if I ever have a question, there's always like someone either at the desk, or if they're maybe those hours, I guess, that they're available or closed, I know that I can have the chat to ask my question as kind of a last resource. And when I have someone at the desk to help me, if they're helping someone else, I mean, I just take a seat and wait my turn. It's not real. But I feel like there aren't so many roadblocks or something like that that prevent me from getting any questions that I have answered, whether it be a short question about like how to cite something, or maybe a more lengthy question as to the, I have a topic that I'm doing research on and I can't really find many articles on it, like, can you help me? I've been able to ask both, and each time I felt like the answers and responses that I got were sufficient to the things I needed to get done.
I feel like librarians in general are really friendly. It's mostly just like us as students having our own hang-ups about asking for help for some reason.
I mean, that's fair enough. So what do you think the hang-ups might be? Not wanting to admit I can't find this thing, or
possibly I think it just doesn't strike you so much. I feel like I have asked for help at the library to, you know, get certain call numbers, or if I was confused about if, because sometimes online it said something was on reserve at Olin, but it was actually on reserve at Eurus. So track down books like that, I've definitely asked like a librarian, they've written down the number for me, like walked me through the whole thing, and been very helpful about it. So that's a good question. I don't know why it doesn't strike us.
Yeah, I think a part of it could just be like students being embarrassed. Like, I had to ask like how to cite something. Like, should I know that? Yes, probably. I just wasn't sure, and like I didn't want to make that mistake. And I think maybe someone else in that position may not ask. They're just like, okay, I'm gonna figure it out. But I was like, I don't know. I'm just gonna ask. Like, and I just had to get over it. I think that that's like part of people just get embarrassed, or maybe think that they should probably know how to do it, and they're just like, I should I make fun of me when I leave?
Who did you ask for help?
I asked, you're right there, you helped me. Yeah. So helpful, so nice. She's so nice. Thank you.
I think we're going to end right there.
You're very helpful, very nice. I was like, I'm going to come back and like ask her any other questions I have.
But if you don't ask, Well, now send everything to you. Who do you ask? Do you ask your parents? Do you ask your friends? Like, who's your person that you're like?
Google.
Okay. Yes,
Google.
Google.
Yeah, say Google.
Google.
You type in Google.
Google. Yeah, just type in, how do I cite this?
Yeah, I think sometimes there's like a cultural reluctance to interact with other people, or it just doesn't occur to you that other people have resources that you can't figure out yourself online.
For some reason, I didn't know that librarians helped you like that. I just thought they were there to, like, you know, it's like,
we are here for that.
I will remember that.
Okay. You may not be alone. We need to get the word out there. So it just, if there's this general reluctance, perhaps, to admit that you don't know, and is that more you're reluctant to go face-to-face? Would you be, in that case, more likely to, like, chat? You know, like, use chat reference, or it's Google?
I feel like that could come down to personal preference.
I think that some people will probably just prefer to figure it out on their own, but others may, like, if you don't have time to figure it out on your own, or you rather, like, you find it easier to just ask your question in person where you could more explain what you mean, like, then I think a personal face-to-face interaction might be better for those instances. And I think that sometimes you may not know, like, I didn't know that she's going to be able to say it. I just figured she's a librarian, like, she'll probably know that better than I might know that. But I think that this is kind of like an off note, but I think if there's, like, a refresher course to the resources that the library offered, I feel like freshman year, you usually have something in your freshman writing seminar where you're, like, forced to go through a workshop or something like that. But as, like, a junior or a sophomore, if I haven't had to use those resources, like, if I took Gen Chem and bio and, like, maybe a math class, I haven't really had to use the library database to figure something out. So by the time my junior year comes, like, I might need a refresher course for what things are out there, like, how can I really specify my searches besides just, like, going on the website and having to figure it out. So even if this little refresher course was a 30 or 40 minute class during the first week of classes that was, like, heavily publicized and made optional, I think that people might kind of, like, take you guys up on that offer. I know I would, because there have been times where I was like, I don't know, like, where to get started on this. But if I know maybe more of the resources that were available, like, one, my assignments would be easier to complete because I could do my searches easier, but two, I just feel like having more knowledge about the resources that are at hand could just, like, make the journey so much easier.
This might be a kind of a deviation, but one thing that, and the idea of not knowing what resources are available, I forget how I learned about Passkey and that it exists, but that's, like, the best thing I've encountered. It just, it made, because I do a lot of research when I'm not on campus, and I think that was promoted on a library website, just, like, it flashed up, here's a thing you can use. So I'd like to see, like, little pop-ups, oh, this is a resource you can use. I think that's helpful.
They really didn't tell graduate students anything. I didn't know. What's the passkey?
So passkey is this. So what often happens is if you're off the Cornell network, out of the bubble, like your home or your wherever, and you're trying to access Cornell restricted resources, like you're trying to get the full text of that article, and you Google it, you know, you're just like, you know, you're Googling a topic, and say, oh, and you'll get to the article, whereas if you were on campus, you'd get, boom, right into the full text. If you're off campus, if you're not, if your IP is not verified, you'll just, it'll be like, well, now please insert your credit card. It'll be $35 for the article. What Passkey does is allow you to, right before you jump into the article, press Passkey, type in your credentials, and then the system is like, oh, this person is Cornell affiliated. So without having to go through the library, you can still Google from off campus and get to all those resources that I'm doing. And it just sits on your browser and you click it, and it's very easy. Definitely one of the most popular.
Yeah, I did not know about Passkey till a few months ago.
And since really? Okay, been, so we gotta get
since then I've been using it a lot.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the most popular. Question from the audience, somebody who hasn't asked a question yet? Toby?
I have a question. All mentioned using the library for individual study and reading, but what about group work and group projects? I haven't that yet, so.
I use that all the time. I'm always, we always need the library. I'm trying to think. Man a lot, and then also I've recently Statler, and then in the cocktail lounge they have, and yeah, that's where we always go to have group projects.
think some libraries are definitely more conducive to that than others, like the ones that have the conference rooms and stuff like that, only because with libraries that don't have that, you have the risk, you run the risk of going there and then not finding enough desk space or having to clamber around one corner of a table instead of having like a round table kind of thing. I'm also part of a student videography group, and we always do our meetings on campus at like the Statler Library, even though you know, we have the option of meeting in Collegetown because that's where most of us live. Yeah, recently I've had more luck with MAN, but the individual rooms and group rooms. Otherwise, they were always taken whenever I went there. So it's nice to have that space where you can talk without disturbing other people and, you know, reserve it for a significant amount of time, as well as I think some places also have you can write on the boards and things like that. Another good thing I think they do is on the second floor they have a space where you can right next to the quiet area where you can talk and move around more, and they have like those comfortable beanbag like things, and they have like boards. So I feel like that's also a nice way to have an open environment where people aren't being super loud, but let's say they're all working on the same let's say we're all working on the same problem set together, and you know, have the original the occasional question, and we just wanted to go and find a desk and not necessarily wait for everyone to show up together or go up to the desk and then check out a room. So I think that's pretty pretty well managed at the places that have like those separate group rooms and things like that.
We also use the group study spaces in Carpenter Library. There are not a lot of them, but and a lot of them are in use most of the time. But apart from the libraries, I think the Duffy Atrium and the Clark Atrium are also very popular group study spaces.
Yeah. What would you look for in your ideal group study space?
Plug points, for sure. Plug points.
Sure. Places you could plug in. Okay.
Whiteboards.
Okay, that seems to be pretty, very, okay.
Yeah. I know sometimes they have markers. The computer screen, but I don't think they're, like,
so whiteboards would be more essential than, like, a LCD screen.
Yeah.
So I feel like most times you might bring your computer, or, like, two people have their computer where you could share it, but if you want to, like, all write something down or kind of, like, go off each other's ideas, I feel like it's much easier to use a whiteboard.
Yeah. And you'd be able to talk. Like without disturbing other people. And I think sometimes having like a cafe or a vending machine or anything nearby is good, because unless you're all going to go get food, one person leaving can disrupt you know, the workflow. So I think having a vending machine or something nearby can be helpful, or a cafe, which is even better.
I would say LCD screen, because I know we have to do like a lot of presentations and PowerPoints. And I just feel like it would be a lot easier if we can just all put it up there, get out the way, and go home.
Mm-hmm.
And save our time.
Yeah.
Okay. Or a projector.
Projector.
I think that serves like a similar purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To be able to, you know, throw up what you're working on.
If we need projectors, then we can always reserve classrooms in buildings.
Yeah, that's true.
That's up for reservation after office hours.
So being able to reserve a space is a problem.
Because otherwise, we often don't have access to those classrooms.
Do you have another WebEx question?
Have you had course-related library research sessions?
I had one since freshman year. Like I said kind of earlier, how you had it like in your that was helpful. But I think after that, I don't know if just professors expect you to be like brilliant at doing research on your own, and like you're now masters of the library database or what. But everything after that has kind of been like on my own, and I just had to figure out how to use the resources that were at hand. And I didn't know like an extensive amount of information, but like what I knew was, I guess, able to carry me through the assignments that I've had.
I have a different experience. I feel like I'm always having classrooms that we're going to like doing a library day and relearn the same thing. I like keep on, and you know, as a senior, I really don't need that anymore. So I don't know, but I think it so depends what class you're in.
I
was just going to say, I don't think I've ever had one with a class.
I had one freshman year, and then I had to take in another one for a class sophomore spring. And I mean, I think I registered more than most people just because I'd taken it twice. But I think one of the things that can make it more effective is just it's it's a lot of information to take in at once, because it's not the longest tutorial you're going to go through, but it is long, especially because a lot of people end up taking it, you know, just for the class, because in order to access a particular library, I think a lot of classes configure it, so in order to access a particular resource, you need to go through the tutorial first. And I think the tutorial was just like a little bit shorter, a little more streamlined, a little less detail oriented. Like, not all the details need to be on there, you know, just like give them something to go off of and then let them go ask a librarian if they need more information.
So this was just to clarify, this was like an online tutorial that you would take as part of the class you were taking?
Right, yeah. So I once had to take a general library tutorial, and sophomore year I had to take a man library specific tutorial that, I don't know, my professor had set up somehow.
What class was that?
I don't know why, I can't remember. I think it might have been a communication class.
Okay.
If I'm not wrong. But I can try to go back and look it up and communicate that to you. But I think that it was just a lot of information at once. And so you, at that point, you're just looking for whatever is relevant to you for that particular assignment. You're thinking more short-term than long-term. And I think if at any other point you specifically want help with something, you can, you know, go look it up, the library website, or Google it or something. But I think just for that tutorial, it was kind of long, because we were told to set aside an hour for it. And you had to go take it at Mann Library.
You had to go to the library?
The first one you could just take at home, which is a general library tutorial. But the Mann one, I remember I had to go take it at Mann. And maybe it was just for that class. Maybe it's not general practice.
Yep.
But I think if it was shorter, it would cater to people's attention spans more.
Other thoughts on instruction in your flow? Back to the audience. Aaron, our favorite reference.
Follow-up question on that, and yes is a no.
I somehow don't like video tutorials at all, but that's just me.
I would definitely use it, considering I missed out on all of this.
They did not tell you anything.
They just told me where to go in case I felt stressed. I don't know how to do any of this.
I think I'd agree that video is, for me, a less helpful platform than like just all written, or like click through the steps. But I just find that easier than a video.
I think it depends on how hard it is to make the video. Because if it's not, like, it's so much easier to edit. If it doesn't take too much time and resources away from the library, I think it's good to have that option, be like step-by-step instructions, or click here to watch a video tutorial, because different people learn differently. So, if it's not that hard of a project to accomplish, I think it's a good add-on to have. And if even that fails, you know, some people just learn better in person. So in that case, you, by that point, a student should have developed the good sense to just go ask for help.
Ready, other than Wendy.
Very shy.
Oh, do we have, is this Gwen again? Gwen, you're not here for most asked questions. Who do we have?
Jaren.
Okay, Jaren, we'll get to you, Wendy.
Yeah.
Sit on your hands.
Have you accessed library guides for your class or Blackboard? Is it helpful or is it confusing?
There's your answer, Jaren. So, how many people have, Angie, could you repeat the question one more time? Yep.
You access library guides for your class through Blackboard. Is it helpful or confusing?
So how many of you have ever accessed or know what, when we say the word library guides, just show of hands?
Do you mean cattle? What? So, yeah, I don't,
okay.
No, we don't know.
Okay. All right. So the library guides are, the library has access to these sort of easy-to-make websites that are all tabbed at the top, and you can go through them, and it's just sort of a website that gives links and information. They're kind of online tutorials. They're not video related, but although you can embed video. Depending on the class you've been in, you may have had what would probably more commonly be called a research guide for the class. It was something that the librarian would have referred to if they'd come to your class and would be like, oh, it had a URL and was set up for your class. In a lot, Jaren, a lot of shaking of the heads.
Can't remember.
I mean, the only thing I've seen related to the library on Blackboard is that when you log on to blackboard.cornell.edu, you see a tab for Cornell University Library. But I've never come to know what that is useful for.
So you've never actually clicked on it?
I've clicked that, but I did not get any resources or anything there.
Really?
Maybe that course for which I was registered
okay,
did not have anything.
Specific. Okay.
But.
Okay, Wendy, you're up.
Thank you. So my question was if there are change, like in library or the or access to the library.
I would love if the elevators worked in yours. For like, you know, I don't know, I just get winded coming up all those steps from the cocktail room. And some days I really have to make the decision, do I really want to go all the way? Or if that door that's now an emergency door, if that works, I can just walk out. Like,
more chargers, more laptop chargers, more, because usually when I go, it's pretty late and they're all checked out already because I have a lot of evening classes. And sometimes that makes a decision for me about whether or not to stay at the library or... I guess just tough it out and go home and try to stay awake and do work there.
I worked at like a really ergonomically friendly company this summer, and so I learned a lot about, they're making a transition from like a normal office space to like an open floor plan office space. So I was in the group where they were trying out like different chairs and different desks, and so I got a lot of, I guess, like practice and being able to stand and do your work. And it was very interesting how they had, they had tables that were just normal tables, and then they had certain tables that, like, if it was a table like this, each table was kind of, like, cut in half. So then each person had their own desk. You were all sitting together, and each desk you could have a button that could raise it or lower it. So, like, say you got tired of sitting halfway through your day, well, you could just push the button to make the table stand. And, like, I know that, like, all the libraries can't have that, but it would be nice to have an option if I wanted to stand and do my work, like, I could do that, because I don't know, the only place I know where I could stand and do my work now is, I know in human ecology in the lounge, they have these tables that are high, and I know in the hotel, they have those new, I guess, like, bench area by the windows that you could stand at and do your work, but those are, like, the only two places that I know where I could comfortably stand with lighting and, like, a charger to do my work, and it would just be nice to kind of have the option sometimes to be able to stand and do my work or something like that. And I don't know how many people would really take advantage of that, because it does take a second to get used to, like, standing to do your work, but it's just, like, a nice way to change how you're standing or how you're sitting if you're doing something for an extended period of time. Okay, yeah, I mean, because I never thought of doing my work any differently before I worked at this company, and I think that because they were really looking to get people used to going into this new office space. I mean, only my group was doing it, and it was a huge building. It had 17 floors in it. Only my group was doing it, and everybody was always checking out, like, what are these tables? Like, why are they moving? And I think that once people saw it, I think that they did really kind of enjoy the idea of being able to change up how you were doing your work. And I think it can wake you up too. I mean, if you're doing work for 6 hours, like, you need a break somehow, whether it's going for a walk, which is always great, or you might just want to stand and, like, do your work while you're standing or something. So
that's one thing you could change.
And maybe more rolly chairs, like the kind that you can make higher or lower, because I know, like, I think maybe I'm maybe shorter than average, I don't know, but I always have, like, it's very frustrating when the table is almost, like, too high and it's not comfortable. Or, like, I know that the chairs in the, I guess, in the cocktail lounge in yours, like, they're way too low for me. And it's very uncomfortable to, like, when I have to do my work. Also, like, the back kind of dips down like that almost. So it's just, like, I know I can't be productive there. Like, I love the light, but I'm not comfortable in how I'm sitting. So I'm, like, that's why I don't go there that often, because I don't like the chairs. But I know a man, like, I can adjust the chairs to be higher or lower, and they're more comfortable, and it just, like, makes me more productive.
If the one thing that I wish would change is that the law library, I don't know if there's, this is even possible, but if the law library was able to be open, I think it's, like, past 9, and I think that would make a lot more people in College Town go to the library to work, especially seniors. And I think another thing is, I mean, I don't know how many other people also work late in the library, but I do, and I always have myself having to go to Eurus or go home at 2, and I really wish I had that, like, extra hour in Olin or Man, which closes way too early for me.
And not even, like, leaving the law library open, but, like, if I could just have access to the building with my ID, because sometimes, like, if I go home late, I don't, like, I'm like, okay, I gotta make that, like, 8 o'clock cutoff to get to the library, and it's like, if you miss it by a minute, you're just, like, out of luck, and then you have to, like, wait outside, and you just, you never know if someone's gonna come open the door or not, so it's hard to, like, plan your eating as if you want to stay close to College Town and you want to go to a library, but you never know if you're gonna be able to get to the law library. So just being able to even just get into the front door with our, like, ID, and maybe not, like, their room upstairs where it has, like, the big tables, but there are other places definitely in the law, like, building, I guess, to study, and it would just be nice to be able to get inside of it and not have to always depend on someone else, like, chasing someone down to get inside, and then you feel like, awkward, are you following me? It would just be, like, nice to be able to get inside and, like, not have it be an awkward encounter.
This is your one follow-up.
So you mentioned that 24 hours. Are there, like, does that, have any of you studied? I mean, like, so yours, is it, does that make you feel better that there's security there? Or, like, I think Duffy Field, you can
and
get in, but it's hard access.
Physical sciences, I know you can get in there in the morning. And I think it's nice, like, I always feel uneasy, like, if I have to, like, leave my stuff and say, like, go to the bathroom or, like, go somewhere else to get a drink of water. Like, I'm sure nothing would happen to it in, like, the 5 or 10 minute time span, but I think it does add a sense of security to have a security guard there. But I also know that when I'm going to these places, there's going to be no one there, and it probably would just be myself. And it's kind of just, like, a decision that I'm making ahead of time. Like, I just know that I won't have that, and I'm just going to have to go to the bathroom really quickly and come back.
And Duffield is 24/7 without any card access.
Duffield's open without.
It's open unconditionally 24/7.
WebEx.
I'd like to get course credit for being researched.
I think it would add an extra incentive to people to maybe work on their skills, and I think in the end it's, like, benefiting them to do it anyway, so I guess you're kind of, like, giving someone a treat for doing something that they should know how to do anyway. But I think if you want more people to know how to do it, that could be a great way. But in the back of your mind, you would know, like, they're going to say thank you because I taught them something that, like, is going to help them so much.
Since credit, it implies, like, there's a set amount of things that you need to do, and it's just, like, an extra work. I don't know. I think even, like, a one credit class can be a lot of, like, time commitment and scheduling commitment. So I think having, like, it not on a credit basis would be easier, for my opinion.
Or making it, like, pass-fail, that may, like, kind of turn in associated pass-fail. It's just, like, not necessarily assignments. Maybe the class could just, if it's, like, us, like, wouldn't necessarily have, like, assignments outside of class if you just came one day a week for 45 little exercises in this class, but it wasn't, like, okay, now go home and find these 10 that component of it.
There are online courses through Sarah library, and what would you want to take it? Now they're doing online badges and different things like that. So if you're not getting a course credit, you want to come away with
just knowing how to use the resources.
Okay.
Awesome. That would be incentive enough. Like, it sounded like before the theme was, you know, I'm a Cornell student, I get hit either in my writing seminar or something during my first year, I get all that stuff. But by the time I'm a junior, it's like CPR. I haven't practiced for a while, and I'd probably be very unsafe if I tried to do it without a refresher of some kind. I'm an unlicensed researcher. So by junior year, you might want that. What would be the incentive to take that refresher, you know, if the library offered it? I think that's kind of the... Would it... Just the fact that it was offered? Or I think Jaron's question is, if there was, like, a one credit, would that be the added incentive to take it, you know, the credit, or would it just be...
Either the one credit, or if you just went to a few classes, like maybe getting extra credit for a class, if that was sort of a... I know, like, if you take surveys and do tests, you get, what are they, Susan points or something? I don't know.
Okay.
Psychology, but something like that, you get an extra...
So built-in extra credit for the class that you were taking.
Yeah.
I feel like it would be incentivized for target students, though. You know, students that genuinely have an interest in refining their research skills, or, say, like, students that work at the library, and I don't know how that works, but if they want to, like, up their skill set, maybe move into a managerial position, I don't know how that works. Or people that work at the writing center at, like, the Knight Institute, like, I feel like it's more targeted towards those students. As valuable as I think it is, I don't think everyone would go for it unless it's incentivized beyond just, like, the internal value it brings to you.
So what would be an incentive?
But I feel like it's wrong to incentivize it unless it's it brings internal value.
Let's throw that question out. Let's just, if you wanted to incentivize it, What would you think would be effective?
Candy is
awesome. So candy would be good?
I think it's done right now in the form of workshops. I think those are really effective. Like, you know, I know there was like an Excel workshop, there was a maps workshop. I was reading about them in the Olin elevator. I just found that I could not make any of those times. So this is going away from your question a little bit, I apologize. But I wish like some of those workshops could be repeated for multiple times. I don't know if you have... I don't know why they're not repeated, maybe time constraints, or maybe the people who do the workshops are on a visiting basis, I'm not sure. But I wish some of those workshops could be repeated, because I would have gone to them. I couldn't make any of those times. I think during class periods should just be avoided in general. Early evenings are pretty good, I think between 4 to 6. If it's an hour, then you can use one of the hours to eat. Like either before or after the workshop, depending on when it is. I think 4 to 6 is the best time period.
An hour. I know for SAS and then data analysis ones, a lot of them were from 4:45 to like 5, so, but maybe not Excel. But yeah, I thought those were easy when you wanted to go to them.
And I think the classes, so there's some classes in ILR that are very, very popular. Like, I think one of them is like, intro to desktop applications or and they're like pages long wait lists for those classes, so there's just people like really, really wanting that skill. And I mean, in that case you can, you know, have those workshops, and then maybe if you attend like a set of 3 workshops, then you can give them a certificate and be like, okay, so you didn't get course credit, but you got like you're certified in like Excel and Word, and, you know, so. And so then it's something that you can put in your people can put in their resume also as like a marketable professional skill.
The audience,
you even knew the academic.
That they specialized in a certain, in a particular subject.
Yeah.
I guess if you had issues with a particular subject, I would use, because struggling in methods, quantitative. So maybe if you specialize in that, you could help setting up Excel and form data analysis.
Or they could even have like a, they would know kind of like the up-to-date studies maybe that were coming out. Obviously they wouldn't know all the studies, but like maybe some of the studies that came out in the past few months or the past few years that were maybe highlighted or something like that. They would just know those things, and they would be able to help me, one, figure those out, but also be able to find maybe some other studies that I may not have thought to look at on my own, or may not have thought were necessarily relevant to that subject, but actually were tied in a really way.
Or like the best journals to use. Like I know there's so many journals. Yeah. I asked the librarian before, like, what should I do for this international ag? And like I've been led to cab abstracts, and like that didn't really help, and it was hard to navigate that whole thing. So maybe that person would know what journals would be best to use for my field.
Yeah, I think of like a research role for sure. Think of someone that's just like a knowledge bank, like has a lot of experience, has a lot of knowledge about, you know, everything or a specific field. Right, thank you, best scholar.
I feel like sometimes I feel bad if I go to like maybe a librarian and I'm asking for help in this like certain thing. They might not have like anything about it, and I feel bad like drilling their brain trying to figure out like what I need, but it's like, well, I don't know, and like you don't know, so then it's like, who do I turn to at that point in time? You know, I mean, I guess it's just Google, but it's like, you, it would be nice to have someone who maybe is like, okay, they're great for studies in like these 3 subjects or like these 3 broader areas, and they don't have to know everything, but knowing that like that person is pretty familiar with their research or things in that area, I think would be helpful, because then it's like you're not wasting someone else's time when like they wouldn't really be able to help you, but, and you're not wasting your own time because they had no idea, like you can't ever heard of something.
Would you, I mean, were you all aware that the 101 talked about sort of going to the area?
I guess it would be more helpful for undergraduate students, because as graduate students we are already a part of a research group, and that gives us access to a very specialized field of knowledge from our group mates or from our advisor, from our seniors in the group. But I mean, I have not been an undergraduate at Cornell, but I think as an undergraduate, when you're writing maybe your honors thesis or working on a project, that would be pretty helpful to have a librarian who specializes in that area.
Excellent.
As a person first-year student, what did you most need to know about the library?
I needed to know how to find articles for papers I was writing, and I found it out. I forget what it's called, but there's like a service or something where you can like chat with someone in the back rooms in Man, and they like help you go and search what you need to search, and that was really helpful. That was like my first.
Really, you set up a consultation with a library?
Yeah, I think they talked about it in our class, and so I was like, oh, okay, we'll just. I don't know if it was, or like, maybe it went up to, I forget, mm-hmm. so long ago, but, kidding, it was 3 years ago, but I went to, or maybe like went to the front desk, and I was pointed to go to like the back offices, but yeah, I just sat down with someone and waited.
I needed to learn how to find papers, and I mostly figured it out by digging around in the course, on the library website.
It's a passkey. I came to know about passkey from one of my friends who showed it to me.
Asia didn't have that friend. Just didn't know. Any other first year, graduate or undergraduate, something you really needed? It was a while ago for someone. Any other questions from the audience? Aaron?
Talk about a lot of things. Ever are in a library and you find that you know whatever.
The only thing that I'm having trouble with right now when I talk to people at the libraries, especially the students who are working there, is like when I can't work out the system of like HD and finding the book, and I feel like I spend so much time like looking for books that I need, and it's sometimes a huge waste of time, especially like one time the book wasn't even there after all that, even though it said it was online. So I think that is the biggest, like, service you could have is like really training the students who are working there to like be able to point me in the right direction. And I've gotten that laminated card so many times, but I cannot the life of me figure it out. And it would just be really helpful if like someone could just like point me where it should be rather than having to navigate that on my own.
An app for your phone?
Oh yeah, like Google Mini.
You're getting warmer?
Yeah, exactly. All the time. Yeah, actually.
Maybe following up on that, improving the mobile website for the library. It's gotten better over time, I realize that, but still make it better. I cannot say specifically what could be made better now, but because I haven't been to the mobile website in a few months. But it did get better since the first time I checked it.
I feel like you guys have covered a lot of the potential ways to get help.
The ball's really in our court in that regard. I think the library does a lot, everything from like attitude to, you know, available access points is there. Good attitude.
Okay. Well, unless anybody has any final questions, it just seems like we've come to a point where it's like we've heard everything. anything last comments you guys want to make? Any questions you want to ask us? Or?
I just want to say thank you to the librarians. You're very helpful. I'm sure that your job is like so daunting, and it's like how do you make students like available other resources for students that don't care or like really have no interest. But I think that like everything that you've done. I think they just agree, and I think that there are a lot of resources that are there, and I think great job. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well,
thank
I'd like
you.
To thank all of you for being so honest and for coming here and sharing your opinions.
I know a few different libraries did this with, like, Man does it in their atrium. They have, like, different exhibits on certain weeks. And then we had the sod grass, like, the study outside thing. I just wanted the library to, like, keep doing things like that. It's, like, really nice because these are things we don't think of, but it's really nice, and I find out about all these. The grass is actually from my housemate's family's farm. but it was very, very well publicized. So
that was a very popular.
It was very nice.
It made the national news.
It was like a pleasant surprise.
I did not know that.
To like walk inside and be like, oh my gosh, there's grass.
this it was really just, is
like grass. Grass.
Is this going to be done again? Any idea?
This semester?
Yeah, no, I think it's. I think
I would like to see more of it.
That and the exhibits, and I don't know, it's a nice way to use the space right outside of the library. And I think I actually saw some people that like were eating on the grass outside in Man before they went in, so I think it helps with that aspect as well, sort of like people wanting to sneak food in. So
that was students. That's students who came to the library and said, hey, would you be willing to do that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, the more ideas you have, and
share
us,
them.
The
that was a DEA student, I think, who came and had that whole. I'll put a plug in for there's a new fungus exhibit. Check out the mushrooms on the second floor. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you have a question?
I did. So it may be kind of repetitive, I guess, but is there something about the title librarian that doesn't really reveal what librarians can do or subject specialists? Is there some other way of putting this that might... Well, take for example, I've asked before, what about research assistants?
Right.
Do those words speak more to what some of these...
I think so. I think when someone says librarian, at least like in my limited knowledge, maybe I'm biased because your question suggests to me that there is more to it than just, you know.
Yeah.
But I think of that person as more of like a... literature specialist, like what books would you go to for more information, and someone that can like scratch the surface a little bit more on like the actual subject, as opposed to someone that like knows more in depth about the subject itself. Does that make sense? Like
maybe
I think of them as like the
so
like
you
use the academic librarian.
Yeah.
I think of someone that is someone I would go to for like a bibliography.
Okay. Okay.
And not just like a bibliography list. Obviously, I think that they had like more specialized knowledge of the subject than me. But I would think they're more of an amalgamation between library sources and the subject than like someone who's a subject specialist who's probably like a PhD in the subject.
They mean very different things to them. Academic librarian, subject specialist. What about a research assistant?
Mm-hmm.
What does that say to you?
I think that says to me someone that is like very specialized in like research topics and like methodology.
But just saying librarian doesn't necessarily call
librarian
any of
just makes me think of like someone that I talk to the reference desk to like help me out with resources, help me out with like books I'm looking for, help me out with like the resources of life. And I also know that they have like knowledge about like books and like literature and maybe even video and media resources. But like the immediate provocation, I think, to the physical space of the library.
What do you think?
It seems more administrative, I guess, than it is.
Okay, okay. Do you have any recommendations on what you think we should follow? So, one that you think would be preferred, that